We acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which we're recording, the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation. This always was and always will be Aboriginal land.
I didn't know that I had an obstruction in my bowel, so that 10 days later when I was like, I really need to go to the toilet, and I had every laxative you can think of, as well as enemas and all of the things, and then I was literally like in fetal position on the shower floor, like, it won't come out. That was probably when I was like, is that normal?
Bowel cancer is the leading cause of death by cancer in people aged 25 to 50 years old. At 25 years old, Kelly Finlayson had just welcomed her first child with her husband, Port Adelaide AFL player Jeremy Finlayson. It was a time where she should have been enjoying the baby bubble and making special memories, but instead she was diagnosed with stage 4 bowel cancer, told to stop breastfeeding immediately and forced to fight for her life. Today, we discuss Kelly's journey to being diagnosed, including a colonoscopy that was cancelled 18 months prior to her diagnosis. She shares what it was like navigating her first year of motherhood whilst also receiving chemotherapy, her mission of trusting your gut, and the symptoms and signs of bowel cancer that everyone should be aware of. Kelly, you are such an inspirational, courageous, strong woman. Thank you so much for sharing your story with us. Let's get into the chat. On this podcast, we discuss the learnings of life with extraordinary and everyday people, because every human being has a story and every human being knows what it means to be alive. I'm Georgia May and this is Life Chats. Kelly, welcome to Life Chats.
Hi, thanks for having me.
No worries. So we will get into your cancer journey today because it's a lot of what you share online. But I'm conscious as well that cancer is not the entirety of who you are. So for people who haven't come across you or your story, can you give us a little bit of insight, like describe yourself for us and what life was like before you started sharing online?
Yeah, so I'm Kelly. I am a 28-year-old mum now, so the mum title didn't come much before the cancer title, unfortunately, so I can't really dive into that as much either. Also a wife, which is fun. Just a confident little firecracker, I guess. Yeah, I've always been like really determined, really adventurous, lived overseas, taken my degree over there. Yeah, I'm just all about making memories, I guess.
Did you have any visions, you know, when people say like, oh, when I grow up, I want to be X. Did you have something in mind?
When I grew up, I wanted to have a big family. So that's been completely wiped from me, unfortunately. But no, I think our dreams and aspirations can change with circumstances. So while I didn't know or think that I'd be here when I was younger, I'm definitely finding a different way.
Yeah, totally. It's hard when you have those visions and, yeah, you have that view of what your life will look like. Obviously, getting diagnosed with cancer in your 20s is definitely not in anyone's life plan.
No.
But I've heard you say as well in interviews that, like, you just don't really have a choice. So you have to choose to get on with it. And I'm keen to discuss mindset later today as
Yeah, that's it. Like, we will get given choices in life, but unfortunately, you don't get many choices when you're diagnosed with cancer. So you kind of just take control of what you can take control of and then just surrender to the rest.
Totally. So you were diagnosed with bowel cancer in 2021. I've listened to you speak about the signs and symptoms, and I'd like to raise some awareness today, but you have said that you thought that maybe you could even be, you might've had symptoms for up to 5 years before you were diagnosed, but you kind of put them off because it's very similar to what just being a woman is like. So what was that? What was going on for you?
Yeah. So I had really, I guess, infrequent bowel movements for quite some time, whether it was a lot or not at all, but they were really easily passed off as just being a woman, especially like that time of the month. I was bloated and would go to the toilet probably more often, and having all the lactose intolerances and celiac and all that, it was kind of like a bit of a hype at the stage when I was experiencing this. So I kind of, you know, cut out dairy, and I still don't have much dairy as it is today, because I think I've built up an intolerance to it from
you like create the intolerance just from cutting it out.
Yeah, almost like that. And it would make me more frequent, which I was already very frequent, so I didn't need to be any more frequent. But yeah, I definitely had the abdominal pains and stuff, and I obviously could put that down to my menstrual cycle, because unfortunately it's not just when you've got your period that you get pains in your abdomen. There's, you know, there's the luteal phase, which is quite swollen. There's the ovulation, which is quite painful. So like it was a constant, and I could kind of always put it down to that. And then a little bit of blood in my stool, but it was only, I didn't realize obviously how severe that was, but at the time it only lasted a couple of days that I could physically see it on the toilet paper. So I just put it down to, well, actually I didn't, but my doctor put it down to me wiping too frequently, which would actually make sense with how often I was going at those few days. I was also partying, so alcohol has a diuretic symptom as well, or side effect, should I say. So it was Melbourne Cup stage that this was happening. So I was like, oh, I've just drank far too much the last week. And obviously when you wipe, it becomes a little bit more tender or sensitive. Yeah, yeah. And so we put it down to that. But I did do a stool sample 18 months prior to diagnosis in Victoria at the end of 2019. And it obviously came back with some sort of discrepancy, because they booked me to see a gastroenterologist to get a colonoscopy. And they said that it was, I guess, in my best interest and to give me some peace of mind, or like find out what's going on, because I still kind of hadn't made that link to a few years prior yet. I probably didn't make that link actually until I was probably a year into my diagnosis, that I was like, oh yeah. And like one of my friends would be like, yeah, you always used to be on the toilet, or like you always used to struggle to go to the toilet, or whatever it was at that time. And I was like, yeah, I have struggled for a really long time with this, but my colonoscopy was cancelled because lockdowns happened. So I guess I, being a young, very naive person, didn't think much of obviously everything that was going on. And I was happy to take the, it's not an emergency surgery or procedure, so we, you know, are cutting it back. And I was like, no worries. I'll take that. I'll continue living my life.
Yeah, you're like, I don't want to drink the prep anyway. So that's perfect.
Yeah. I don't want to drink the prep. And also, like, I was so naive. I was like, what's the worst they're going to find? Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I didn't even know what a colonoscopy found.
Yeah. How do you feel about that now? Because what we'll get into, like, you fell pregnant and you have a beautiful daughter. That's obviously the silver lining. But how do you feel looking back? Do you feel like these elective procedures are potentially not elective? They are really life-saving procedures.
Well, yeah, and I think that that's becoming more common knowledge, not just for those that are going through it, but even for the medical staff. They're realizing that maybe it's not an old person's disease. Well, it definitely isn't. Obviously, I'm 28 now and I've been living with it for 3 years. So it's definitely not an old person's disease, but I think it's making others wake up to the fact that there's a lot of people experiencing things very similar, and it really is a why not kind of procedure. Like, it's either going to find something hopefully early or not find anything at all. And that's a better case than finding it 18 months prior at a obviously terminal stage. Like, I think in hindsight, obviously I wish that I had had that procedure, because falling pregnant, the hormones that come with that, the stress that come with that, probably did grow my tumor at quite a substantial rate. But it's also doesn't feed on estrogen or anything. So like, we don't know, but stress is obviously a cause of the growth as well, which you get when you're pregnant. But at the same time, I wouldn't have it any other way, because if I got diagnosed those 18 months prior, I probably would have never had my child.
It's such an interesting set of circumstances, which is like what we talk about on this podcast all the time, that sometimes in life there's all these sort of things that line up that lead us to where we are. And if you look back, it's like, even though it's led you through this journey, which is obviously terrible and so, so tough, you almost wouldn't change it, because now you have your daughter and it's such an impossible circumstance to think about changing.
Yeah, for sure. And like, I know that I would have probably been given more options with like preserving my fertility, or I might have been caught at a really easy stage that they could have just removed it. And like, obviously there's so many things that could have happened, but they didn't. So yeah. I kind of can't dwell on that, because there's honestly no point in stressing about things you can't control, especially when there's so many things to stress about with my life.
Life is hard enough. Exactly.
Yeah.
The colonoscopy was cancelled and then you fall pregnant. This is also an interesting set of circumstances, because you're already navigating something that you are putting down to just being a woman. So many women are uncomfortable throughout the month. They're sick, their bowels aren't regular. And then you fall pregnant, which you probably got a whole other plethora of symptoms where you're like, that's just because I'm pregnant. At what stage did you start to like realize that something maybe wasn't right, or you weren't feeling normal, I guess?
Yeah, well, I could also put it down to having COVID, because I'd never had COVID before. Yes. So I kept thinking, oh, it's just COVID. Or yeah, I would present to emergency with quite literal rashes on my abdomen. Oh my God. I'd be like, it's just COVID. or like all of these things, or like the pressure and the varicose veins. And like, obviously that's pressure in my pelvis area, which could be the tumor. We don't know. And I would just put it down to that. Or yeah, it was a wild time to be navigating, and also people just being completely like terrified of anyone that presented with any symptoms. So if I did present and I was like, I've got a rash, they'd be like, oh
yeah, it's COVID.
Oh my God, like put your PPE, whatever it's called on. Like nobody touch her.
Yeah, wow.
So it was a really interesting time to navigate. But postpartum, again, a whole another set of, I guess, symptoms and things going on in my body that I'd never experienced before. So that's another thing. I had nothing to compare it to because I'd never experienced it before. The pregnancy itself was normal, I guess, as normal as you can be. Like, I can't complain. I had a good pregnancy in comparison to others. But the postpartum, like, I lied about going to the toilet before I left because nobody wants to be stuck in the hospital longer than they need to be. But I was just terrified to go to the toilet, so I thought, which I was, because it's bloody scary. But then also, obviously, I didn't know that I had an obstruction in my bowel, so that 10 days later when I was like, I really need to go to the toilet, and I had every laxative you can think of, as well as enemas and all of the things. And then I was literally like in fetal position on the shower floor, like, it won't come out.
Poor thing.
That was probably when I was like, is that normal? But then like you hear all the stories, like people are terrified of going to the toilet. And like, I'm like, yeah, same.
No wonder, especially if you've also have a history of being constipated, you'd think like, well, this is just what my body's like. I'm obviously this is what it does.
Yeah, for sure. And especially with the fear of going, like obviously you don't want to push. You think everything's going to fall out. There's nothing to fall out, but you think it's going to fall out. Yeah, so I feel like that's a fear that's instilled in every woman after giving birth, let alone someone that obviously had an obstruction that they didn't know about.
So you go back to hospital, I assume, at this point?
No. I just pass it on. And then I actually live, so I gave birth in the hub, which is a whole nother circumstance. So we were in the AFL hubs at the time, and I gave birth in the hub. My husband had to quit football for the year and stay with me. He had to choose between travelling with a team or staying put, where we knew we could, I guess, see a doctor that I'd become familiar with in the 2 weeks that I was there. Yeah, so we just lived our happy little lives in Queensland for 3 weeks, and then we requested a trade back to South Australia. So we moved back home and just lived with my parents for a little while. Life was quite literally normal. Nothing was out of the norm. A little bit of a lower milk supply, but like, how am I supposed to know what's normal? No pain. Like, I was going to the toilet normally, like all of these things. Like, yes, my stools were a lot thinner, but like, again, I didn't know if that was normal. So yeah, I just lived my happy little life for a few months, which was lovely. And then it wasn't until we moved to Adelaide with Jeremy's new job that I'm from South Australia, so I was showing him all the sights, and he'd never been here longer than, you know, a night to play football. So going up to like the Adelaide Hills or the wineries, all the things, and yeah, he made a joke about me needing a portaloo from the frequency of needing to go to the toilet. And then I saw a GP and mentioned that there was blood because, you know, there was blood from everywhere. I didn't know what was normal again, and she was completely concerned to the point that I was literally having colonoscopy within a few days, and then diagnosed not long after that. So it was a really quick, and I realized that if it was any slower, I probably would have fallen into a rut. But then at the same time, I've realized that if things are wrong, things move fast, so at least it moved fast.
So you go in for this colonoscopy. At any point are you thinking like, did you ever think that it could be cancer, or are you just not even exposed to that reality at this point?
No, so I've only ever experienced my grandma having breast cancer. I didn't even know that colon cancer was a thing. I knew that you could get testicular cancer, skin cancer, and breast cancer. I didn't know there was other cancers. I didn't know that a colonoscopy found cancer, so that's really good. I thought I was going to be maybe diagnosed with Crohn's, and my mum was actually really stressed in Port Lincoln thinking that maybe I was going to be diagnosed with Crohn's, knowing how serious that can be. So I thought that I'd probably wake up and be told like, I've got to go on maybe steroids or change my diet, whatever it may be, to make this better. So yeah, when I woke up and was told that I had cancer, it was a bit of I can't even say that I was sad. I was just in complete shock. So I didn't register it for a really long time.
Yeah. So you come out of this colonoscopy, you get told straight away, and then do you have any control over your treatment? Do you have any control over what comes next? Or are you kind of just picked up in this whirlwind and you go along and you're kind of just trying to figure it out as it goes. I'm sure so many people listening to this will know people that are navigating cancer, but from someone who's like in the eye of the storm, it sounds like a completely overwhelming whirlwind.
Yeah, completely overwhelming for sure. I think for myself and my husband, we'll both... not even shock, it was complete denial almost, yeah. Like relying on those around us and those in the medical field to kind of tell us what to do, because we'd never had to do any digging and knowing, I guess, what options there were or whatever it may be. But I had always had two extra people with me in every meeting because I was really good at looking like I was absorbing information, but I'd get into the car and say, so what was that about? And I was really lucky that I had an incredible village around me that were able to help in every way they possibly could. But basically, when I was told I had cancer, the next day I was told to go see a surgeon. So within not even 24 hours, I was seeing my surgeon, who was describing that I was going to have a colostomy, which also had no idea that they existed. So I was about to have a bag put on my stomach to collect my shit, essentially, which was terrifying.
How do you even process that? And you also got, let's not forget, people listening, you have a 3-month-old baby and you're like,
yes,
breastfeeding.
So I had a 3-month-old baby at the time as well. And obviously I had prepped for the colonoscopy only 48 hours prior to this meeting with my surgeon. So I was not feeding her that day as much because obviously I didn't want her to have the laxatives. Yeah, it was a nightmare of a day, actually. Like, I can still picture so vividly her laying down on the bath mat outside the shower while I was, because my prep didn't work because I had an obstruction. So it was coming back up. So I was laying in the shower in fetal position. She was laying on the mat in fetal position. She fell asleep and I was just laying there in pain, like, come home, Jeremy, because he just started a new job. And then, yeah, 48 hours after remembering that, I was being told that I would have to wean her from breastfeeding because I was having a surgery in a couple of days. So it was a crazy emotional time of my life.
Do you feel like you kind of have to numb yourself from processing in the moment because you're just trying to look at the next step rather than like processing and wondering, you know, working through how you're feeling? It's like, what's the next step? What's the next day look like? What's tomorrow look like?
Yeah, I think I was subconsciously numb regardless. I don't think I was intentionally doing that. I think that was just my
survival,
fight or flight kind of experience. But yeah, when one, like, sitting in that chair, like, you kind of know that you don't have much control when you've got a doctor that originally said, we're going to cure you, to then having a scan and saying, we'll try and prolong your life. You know that it's pretty serious and you kind of just got to like take the hits wherever they come from and get through it. You kind of have to rely on your body to do what it's meant to do. And my body doesn't do what it's meant to do anymore. So I'm not sure how I ever relied on it then. But you just have to know that they've been in this for years and they know what they're doing. So if they don't know, then no one does. So you kind of just have to, yeah, trust completely in your medical team.
What do you wish people listening to this knew about cancer, either bowel cancer or just in general going through a terminal illness? What do you wish you could just shake people and say, I wish you understood this?
Probably that it doesn't discriminate, because I have so many people being like, well, what was your diet like? Were like, do you know what I mean? Like, was there any family history or whatever? And I had nothing like that. Like, I was running marathons. I was healthy. Like, I just had a baby. Clearly my body was doing what it was meant to do. Like, yeah, there was no family history. Like, I just, everything that I was doing was so normal and so even like above normal. Do you know what I mean? Like, I was excelling
healthy
in life.
Yes.
So like the fact that people still think that it's only going to hit people that are doing the wrong thing is just bizarre to me. And like, I am one of those people, or I was one of those people that was completely blank and like blinded by what goes on in so many people's lives. But I think it's really important to realize that it doesn't give a shit who you are, what you do, what you've done. It'll get you when you least expect it.
It's dangerous as well, I think, for people to almost put like a sense of blame or maybe something you did caused cancer like that. What an awful thing to say to someone who's like navigating the hardest thing of their life. Oh, let me interrogate if they might have been the reason that they got this diagnosis. It just doesn't make sense to me.
The amount of times I've been told that I took the COVID jab, so that's why I got cancer. I'm like, sis, my colonoscopy got cancelled before COVID existed.
Before I got it.
So I promised you it was happening beforehand.
Oh, God.
But yeah, I'm like, some people just might come up with the wildest things, or like, I've thought this and manifested this into my life and like didn't drink the juice. And I'm like, oh.
I'm honestly sorry that that happens to you, because I can't imagine how emotionally draining your life is in general. And then this on top, it's like, anyway.
It's almost laughable though. Like, it kind of gives me something to, as some joy into my day, like, that some people are this delusional.
Yeah.
It makes me feel a lot better about myself and my I guess, knowledge and intelligence.
Totally. So you mentioned at the start that your fertility has been taken away from you. That was like a big goal of your life, is to have a big family. What point is that a discussion with your doctor, or that ended up happening due to your chemotherapy? How did that occur?
Yeah, so the first question I actually asked when I was sat there and got told that I'd be starting chemotherapy was, when do I do IVF? And they kind of laughed at me, and I was like, what? Like, I'm sitting here obviously with a tiny baby, so that's all I'm thinking about. Yeah, it's like, yeah, my family, my family, my family. Everyone else, including my husband and my mum, were looking at me like, bitch, you want to die? Like, you're going to either be her mum or you're going to give her a sibling. What one are you going to choose? And I've actually just spoken about this today with my co-host of our podcast, about maybe regretting not doing the IVF, but then also at the same time, what happens if we made these embryos and then I died in those 9 months of doing that treatment or whatever it may have been, and then the embryos would have been built for nothing? And like, no one can have that embryo transferred into their womb other than me, because if I died, they wouldn't have, do you know what I mean? Like, it's not written off that they can use it. So it would have been a waste of time anyway. So there was a lot of what ifs and all that sort of stuff, like a lot of hindsight. Like, I still speak to my husband about it now. We're like, we wish we waited those 2 weeks. But at the same time, I had never had a period since falling pregnant. So that's 12 months of no period. We don't know when I'm meant to menstruate next. So that could have been 6 weeks, you know what I mean? Like, we just didn't know when the next time was. And my doctor looked me dead in the eye and said, do you want your daughter to have a mum or a sibling? And I was like, oh, it's that serious.
What an impossible, impossible question.
But it's also really like a reality here of like, shit, my body's not doing what it's meant to do. Am I selfish almost for trying to grow my family when I know that I'm literally undergoing chemotherapy again for the third year in a row? Like, I know that it's not selfish, and that obviously a sibling for her is fantastic. But then at the same time, now she's three. Do I want a sibling to give her a sibling in 2 years' time? And then she's at school anyway. They're not growing up together. What's the point? Do you know what I mean? Like, there's so many things to think about, and it's definitely different to what I expected. But like, I've come to terms that I'll never carry. And now it's just like working out whether we grow the family or not.
So is that you cannot be doing those two treatments at the same time? Obviously, you can't be retrieving eggs and undergoing chemo. So do you have to wait until a point where you would no longer be undergoing chemo to then start IVF?
Yeah. So they gave me the option to do my first 5 weeks of radio and chemo, and then would like reassess it, because I ended up getting my period that week. But then I was already undergoing chemo by the time, obviously, I was ovulating. So I ended up getting my period during the surgery, my first surgery, which was fantastic.
Add that to the
list. Heavy period. And I was also getting mastitis because I just stopped breastfeeding. It was a wild, wild week of my life. But yeah, I'd already started chemo when I would have been able to collect eggs. So I couldn't do that then. But they did give me the option to do it after I'd stopped. But I went and had my FSH levels tested, and they were far too high, which means I couldn't have had the FSH stimulator to make the follicles grow and be able to collect eggs. So there was really no point.
A quick break from the episode to speak about our reviews. Now, Life Chats has recently hit over 30,000 listens, which is honestly incredible. So exciting. But we only have 18 reviews on Apple Podcasts, which is a bit sad. So it would mean the world if you could just take 1 minute out of your day to leave a written review for us, either on Apple or Spotify. There is truly so much time and care and effort that goes into these episodes. I research, edit, host, distribute, do everything all by myself. And I don't make any money from this show. I do it because the stories deserve to be heard, and I truly love it. So if you could do that review, that would mean the world. You can also follow us on Instagram and TikTok at Life Chats Podcast if you don't already. The goal is to build a bigger community so I can continue producing these inspiring conversations. Thanks so much for being here. Back to the episode. So you go through chemo at this point. Did you get told like a roadmap of what that looked like? Or is it just like, we're going to treat you until things start to look better? I guess with a terminal diagnosis compared to stage 1, 2, or 3, how does that change things?
Yeah, so they do give you a bit of a roadmap, but I never got given like a timeline or anything like that. I think my doctor, within minutes of meeting me, knew that if he gave me a timeline, I would live to it. I guess would like surrender to that and just live out the 18 months or whatever he gave me. So he just gave me 12-week blocks, which was really easy to manage. I say easy, but like much more manageable than thinking, you know, 9 months time sort of thing. So we did the 5 weeks of chemotherapy and then re-scanned, and then it was 12-week blocks. So I did 2 12-week blocks, and then we re-scanned in between each of them so that we knew on what track we were on, and then we'd have a surgery booked, and all these things were happening within 12-week blocks. So that was great for me, for someone who's a bit of a type A person. I don't like to admit it, but a bit of a control freak type person, being able to know, I guess, what my next steps were. Because he basically sat us down and said to myself, my husband and my mum, wipe off the next 12 months. They don't exist anymore. And I was like, whoa. I knew how serious cancer was, but I didn't realise how much life it takes away from not just you, but everyone in your orbit. And obviously, Sophia, I missed out on my first year of motherhood. Great time for it to happen, mind you. I've had friends go through it with 9-year-olds.
Wow.
A lot harder than having someone that's got a 1-year-old that doesn't understand anything. Hard for me, but easy for her, if that makes sense, which I'd much prefer. But yeah, so we did 12-week blocks, and I was allergic to one of the strands of chemotherapy originally. I didn't know that at the time, but I was literally on my deathbed every 3 weeks. So we thought we thought I was going to die from the chemo, not from the cancer, at most stages. And I laugh about it now because it's a morbid reality that I've lived. But there's not really, I guess, things in place, but it was just trust your doctors. And I had the most optimistic surgeon you'll ever meet, to the point that when I relapsed, he was like, I'm not convinced.
Wow.
Okay. I'm convinced. I'm dying.
Help me.
Can't breathe.
Help me, please.
Yeah, so he's really great. I love him to death. He saved my life. I would say that. I'd put it down to one person. It's him. But even getting my stoma, he would make a joke out of it, or stick a fake one on me and be like, "Haha, you're gonna shit out of that." He'd make it fun so that I was able to take the piss out of myself as well. Because the more serious you take it, which it is, it's serious, the harder it is to get through.
Totally. So for people, that don't really understand the reality of chemotherapy, what was it like?
It's impossible to explain to a T. Even someone that, oncology nurse I've spoken to, obviously my fair share, even them who give it to someone every single day, or multiple people every single day, they can't explain from all of the experiences that they've been told or witnessed what it's like, because it is so different for every single person. But essentially, it's just you're nauseous, you're fatigued, you're lethargic, the chemotherapy I had gave me neuropathy.
Yeah, right.
Neuropathy. So, and I still get that now. So I get it in my joints now, which is obviously 2 years delayed because I haven't had oxyplatin in so long. But yeah, so I was allergic to oxaliplatin, but I didn't know that until I was out of it. So I was getting anaphylactic reactions every single time I had it. And I spent days in hospital, basically just on the drip to try and reboot my system. But yeah, the first time I got it, I genuinely thought I wouldn't wake up. I was too scared to go to sleep, which obviously sleep is the best medicine. I was too scared to go to sleep because I thought that my eyes wouldn't open again. And that is just wild. It's
terrifying.
Yeah. Or holding Sophia and my hands would seize and I'm like, oh my God, someone come get the kid. Oh my God, oh my God. Wow. It was so wild.
And are you going through chemo at the moment, did you say, your third year?
Yeah, I am. I'm on an oral chemotherapy on capivetacine, which is actually exactly the same chemotherapy that I was having last year. But the thing that comes with cancer and chemotherapy is trauma. And your body responds to trauma in such a wild way. I never thought I would ever have, I guess, anxiety or trauma, PTSD. Apparently it's a real thing. I just use it as a flamboyant, flippant thing. But yeah, so I had a pump last year, which is exactly the same chemotherapy that I'm doing this year. But I would get so sick from it because I wasn't allowed to shower for 2 days because I was attached to something, or all of these things that the noise of it sounds like a hospital. And I was getting so unwell from this chemotherapy that I'm now thriving on. So it's just really strange that I guess my brain hearing that beeping noise was like, holy shit, chemotherapy. Whereas now I take a few tablets that they look like, oh, I can't even explain it. They literally just look like, multivitamins.
Yeah.
So I feel like I'm just taking some tablets in the morning at night. They make me a little bit unwell. Yeah. Am I more sensitive to stuff? Yeah. But at the same time, I'm living a really normal life.
And you're not exposed to the traumatic situations and the circumstances that you were in prior. So you kind of get a bit more control.
Yeah, and I still go and sit in the chair every 3 weeks and I do all that stuff. I'm still hooked up to my, in my oncology ward every 3 weeks. But the nurses are beautiful. I'm not, I don't have a terrible experience there, and I never have in this new ward that I've been in. Obviously, the one when I was getting anaphylactic reactions is quite triggering, but totally. This new one, I've never had a terrible experience in. It's always been at home once I took the pump with me or whatever it may have been. But the trauma response isn't there, and I feel like that makes it a lot easier.
And is this, I noticed you mentioned online, like you got some pretty like upsetting and terrible news a few months ago. Do you feel like tracking your cancer spreading or the progress of it, is that something that you feel like you want to do, or are you kind of leaving that up to your doctors and just trusting the process at this point?
I definitely am much more across it now. I would say most people get cancer and they're done a year after, they're either dead or they've in remission, right? So the people that live past that 12 months still within it do a lot more digging and investigating and finding, I guess, more options. There is so many options, and that's the thing that you're not told right at the start. Obviously, Western medicine has been developed for a reason and it works for most people. But there's also so many integrative ways that you can make yourself feel better while undergoing these things. Like, while I wouldn't ever say that you could heal yourself completely holistically, there's always a targeted drug or something needed, or a large expense needed at least. It's definitely the integration of both is completely wild, and there's so many options to be able to make it more manageable. For myself, I spend stupid amount of money each week, but I've also got a lot of the machines at home now because I've been living with it so long. I've realized, I guess, the benefits of the things that I'm doing. And just this morning, I got a phone call. I've been doing chemotherapy. This is my eighth week of this cycle, which normally I do 20 weeks before I see any results. And it's my eighth week, and I've already, my tumor markers have quartered. So wow. That's what I mean. Like, I got a scare, which was a little rise in the blood. So I started my chemotherapy again because there was a millimeter of growth, which is still growth. So I started my chemo again, and I'm doing all my holistic stuff, my alternate therapies, and it's quartered within half the time.
That's incredible. Yeah, it is
incredible. And like, no one that's being diagnosed originally is going to think about these things, and I don't blame them. I think you definitely need to put all your trust in your doctors. But once you've been going through it once you've at least relapsed once, generally you do more digging, and I definitely take more control of making sure I'm monitoring my bloods or asking for a scan if I feel not great, which that's huge for me because scans scare the shit out of me. But it's
advocating
it's
for yourself a bit more as well.
Yeah, and I kind of know what's going on. So like, people can't speak in their language and me not understand it. So that way I'm far more across it as well. They can say an abbreviation and I know what they're saying now. So they have to tell me rather than just speaking between themselves.
Yeah, totally. What are the holistic approaches that you're doing at home or that you've seen benefits from?
Yeah, so at the moment I'm on a trial for an oncotherm, which is essentially like this plate that sends like electric nodes through, and it just helps the chemo get to where it's meant to go and kind of protects the healthier cells. Like, obviously I'm still being affected. The chemotherapy is still affecting my entire immune system, but this helps it go to where it's meant to go, which is obviously ideal when it's working. From what I can see, it's working. Obviously it could just be the chemo doing that, but I would never know. And I'm not going to stop doing the other one to find out. And then I'm also doing a whole lot of like oxygen, hydrogen water, alkaline water, like just everything that's going in my system is to promote the healing of my immune system so that my immune system can do what it needs to do.
Amazing.
Yeah.
And I feel like during this journey you've come across other people who are navigating the same thing. Is this something that you discuss? Like, what are you guys trying? I'm doing this. Is it something that you share, your journeys?
Most of the people that I have come across, I've only got one friend actually that's doing more of a holistic approach. She's been to Mexico and spent hundreds of thousands of dollars to do so. But she's also on a targeted drug. So that's, I guess, where I'm coming from. Like, while yes, she's done a lot to heal herself, she got given 6 weeks and she's healed 2 stage 4 cancers. So she's doing a lot, which is great. So I can speak to her about things, but it's also a different cancer. So what works for her might not work for me. But then also the other people that I come across, they're either going through a first-time diagnosis or they're in remission. Because like I said, if you make it to that 12-month mark, half the time you're either in remission or you're dead. So that 12 months mark definitely holds a big significant weight. And like there is a lot of people that live with stage four cancer and do it, manage their life and live on a whatever. Like I'm not saying that's not possible, but often what I found is that, yeah, once they're out, like I don't find people that are doing the second or third year that I can relate to.
What do you think the power of the mind is in a journey like this? What have you learned?
Honestly, crazy. Like I didn't realize how powerful or like how it's basically the best tool in your box is your mind. It is, I can't even explain how much it's helped me get through. Like obviously I have quite a positive mindset. I look quite healthy as well, which I think's helped. I think the way that I've gone about things in terms of not surrendering to the disease in any way, of course I have my days that I'm like, well, fuck
why
this.
Me?
Like, why me? Yeah. But most of the time I'm like, I kind of take it in my stride and like have turned pain into power rather than letting it consume my mind. I think the minute that it would consume my mind, I would probably be done for. But yeah, it's just been incredible. Like, not giving into even things like people would suggest writing notes for milestones or like having voice boxes put into teddies and stuff like this. And I'm like, but that I feel for me is surrendering and giving into it and like almost putting it out there that that's what's going to happen. So yeah, I've definitely like in a weird way been in complete denial for the last 3 years of what I'm actually living. Like some days I have a really bad day and I'm like, why is this happening? And someone will be like, you have cancer in your lungs. I'm like, oh, right. The other day I literally went to my doctor and I was like, I can't stop coughing. Because I had pneumonia a few months ago. And I was like, the pneumonia will not go away. And she's like, you have cancer. I'm like, oh yeah.
That makes sense.
I forgot. So yeah, I think I've definitely like put it to the back of my mind and don't really think about it a lot, but it's crazy. Like the people that are negative and dwell on it often live to the dates that they're given, and the people that are positive and think, I guess I can do this, often do.
Where do you think that comes from? Because I'm so interested in mindset. Do you think that you are someone that you're just innately positive and determined and you kind of described yourself as type A, or do you think that the circumstances you're in are kind of like make or break and you either step into that? Is that something that was already in you or has this brought it out in you?
I think I've always definitely been a positive, confident person, definitely. But also once you become a mum, there's literally no other options. Like if you are negative and dwell, they read on that so easily, so quickly. Like I don't want her to be traumatized from her whole childhood. Like, obviously, yes, she knows mummy's sick, but she doesn't need to know what extent that is. Like, she needs to grow up as a child as well. And I don't want to take that away from her. I've taken enough away from her. I don't need to do that as well. So I feel like if I wasn't a mum, my experience would have been completely different. I don't actually think I would still be here. She's definitely been a purpose to get through and to be so positive. But yeah, I could probably thank her for my life, for the rest of my life. I won't say it until she's like 18 because I don't want her to use it against me. But if she's anything like me, she will.
Don't actually know your power, okay? Don't yet know it.
Yeah, she's already a teenager with far too much attitude, so exactly. I don't need to give her anything to leverage off.
Exactly. Tell me about your podcast. That's another amazing thing that has come out of this. So much advocacy work and awareness and just connecting with other women who are going through the same journey. Tell me a bit about that.
Yeah, so we both together, we actually met on 5 North, which is the ward that we were in. We have the same, well, not the same surgeon, but from the same surgical team. And we didn't have anything like it when we were diagnosed. I actually didn't have anyone really to talk to that was in my age bracket or had been through similar at all. So I guess I was then that person for so many other people, including Sophie. She definitely got to bounce off of me, which is really cool for her. I had one person in Victoria that was diagnosed at a very similar time with a 4-month-old, which is wild. Yeah. So I'm very close with her, but she's in remission now. So like another one that's kind of, you know, gotten through it and just gets to not live their life, because don't get me wrong, collateral damage is almost worse than the chemo and all that initially. Having to, I guess, live life without any control still. But yeah, so we kind of started this podcast as not a safe space, but kind of like as a voice for those that don't know how to use theirs or don't have anyone to reach out to. There's not a lot of resources, especially for people our age. Like, yes, okay, you can see a psychologist or a counselor, but they haven't had cancer. They don't actually understand. They can empathize and they can help you manage your emotions and whatever they do. Like, of course, that's their job. But when you sit down and you completely trauma dump, they don't understand. while they're trained to do that, and they can help you manage and put things in place to, I guess, manage your emotions and all of those things, which is important. I can't say I've ever been able to find one successfully that works for me, because I am quite, I'm a control freak, but having someone that's been through it and being able to tell real life experiences, while again, you can't compare your experiences, you can kind of see different maybe techniques that we used, or just being able to relate to someone and being like, oh, I'm not alone. Like, oh, that happens to other people, or like whatever it may be. Like, I feel like that's really helpful. And yeah, like I said, we just didn't have that ourselves. So we wanted to put that in place so that other people did. And then from that, we've just managed to do so much advocacy around it. And we've literally saved thousands of lives, which is incredible. So weird to say, but it's the truth.
Well, like what we've spoken about at the start of the episode, people assume that this is an old person's disease, or they brush off their symptoms. By hearing you speak about it, even I know that this episode will be shared and people will be more aware, myself included, about if you have signs in your body and they don't quite feel right, or something is ongoing, that you should go and get checked out, because it would be better to just put it down to another small symptom than leave it and you end up having a much harder journey ahead. So it's so important, the work that you're doing.
Yeah, it definitely is. And it's taken us a long time to realize, I guess, how much of an impact we have had, because originally it was just us sharing our experience. And then I guess the input and the response that we've been getting, and like even just like the random messages that you don't expect, like they're the reason you keep going, and the reason you realize, I guess, what we're saying has so much impact, positive impact on so many people. It's pretty incredible. And yeah, it took us a really long time to realize, I guess, how powerful our words are.
Totally. Do you ever feel the weight of that? Do you ever feel like that's exhausting, having to show up for more than just yourself on a daily basis, or yourself and your daughter and your partner?
No, not really. I feel like it's also my space that, like, I show up and I'll do a keynote and I'll literally open with thanking the audience for being there, because I'm about to trauma dump on them, and that's psychology for me. A problem shared is a problem halved, like that kind of situation. And just the more I talk about it, the less I can, or the more I can distance myself from the story and feel like I'm talking about someone else. Like, obviously, yes, this is my real life, but the way I'm able to speak about it is as if it could be anyone's life. It could be any 28-year-old's life. It's not talking about me, like I am, but you know what I mean? Like, totally. I'm very emotionally detached from it.
Totally. Let's wrap up with something that is really beautiful that I read that you have, is the living list. Tell me why that's important to call it that and not a bucket list.
Yeah, well, I'm not really writing a list to introduce kicking the bucket, am I? Which is what a bucket list is for. So I guess I just have to be different. I just had to change it up and make it something, I guess, that other people can grab onto and really hold on to hope for as well. Like, I want to do these things while I'm alive, while I'm living, because that's the thing. Like, I'm living on borrowed time. It's inevitable. That's exactly what I'm doing. I'm choosing to really live while I'm living that life. So yeah, I've got a list of things that I'd like to tick off. Some of them are as mundane as watching my daughter ride a bike for the first time, which we ticked off. So like things like that, that people are expecting, are no longer expected for me. So it's more of a privilege to be able to see those things happen. And like, obviously there's some big things on there as well that are privileged as for everyone. But yeah, there's a lot of things on there that are just privileges for myself now to experience, like seeing Soph go to kindy, so she's there now, and like seeing her go to school, seeing her get her first boyfriend, seeing watching her sneak out of the window for the first time, all these things that I still want to experience as a mum and like, and as a person myself as well. Like, I've got big career goals, I've got lots of things in the works that you'll be able to hear about very soon. But yeah, so like doing things for me, but also having them on a list so that I feel like I'm achieving things, because I, again, don't have control of a lot of things. So this list is something I do have control of.
If you could go back to a version of you prior to this journey, or anyone listening who is in that level of like naive bliss, that life, these sort of things don't happen to them, what would you say?
Stay there for sure. Naivety is the best way, and you shouldn't have to think about it or deal with it until you have to.
That's beautiful. I end this podcast asking every single guest the same question, so you can answer in as many or as little words as you like. But that question, Kelly, is, what is the meaning of life?
Oh, I think just living. I feel like being present and living in the moment. And I wouldn't have said this 5 years ago, but being present and living in the moment is what life is all about.
Thank you. You're such an incredible woman. I know you'll probably brush compliments off and say, like, you know, you're just doing what needs to be done, but you truly are really inspiring. I think your mindset is just so incredible for anyone listening. This is like, just take notes of this is what you need to approach difficult circumstances in life with, because yeah, you're living life to the max. You're still having amazing experiences, building your career. I think you're an amazing woman and an amazing mum.
Another thing that I think I should leave with is, it's obviously the diagnosis happening to you, but the way you respond to it is the way that you experience it. So yeah, it's definitely not something you would ever choose, but the way you respond is something that you've got the choice of.
You're incredible. Let our listeners know where they can find you, where they can listen to your podcast, and yeah, any other ways to contact you.
I think I'm just Kelly Finlayson _ on Instagram, and we're Shit Talkers Pod as well. So just wherever you find your podcasts, and Instagram and TikTok and all the things.
Love it. It's an easy one to remember, Shit Talkers. I mean, there's not probably not many other podcasts called that, so.
No.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. Please let me know who you'd love me to chat to next. Or if you have a story of your own you'd like to share, you can connect with me directly on Instagram at LifeChatsPodcast, one word. Until next time, I'm Georgia May, and this is Life Chats.